But there are many expressions of love. You know, we express brotherly love, we express it to our kids, we express it to one another. But comfort is a particular expression of love that goes to the very core of the pain that we've experienced. It goes to the very, you know, it goes to where it hurts. And it's when we receive true and pure comfort that it brings healing to our hearts. The dictionary definition of comfort is to bring relief from pain, to bring relief from distress or affliction, to satisfy and to strengthen within. And comfort does that, doesn't it? When we receive comfort, it strengthens us inside. And it builds us up where we've perhaps, you know, not been built up, or where we've been knocked about and wounded. Comfort provides a sense of well-being. And the other part of the dictionary definition was, comfort enables you to enjoy a quiet contentment. That's so true, isn't it? When we're comforted, we can enjoy that quiet contentment. And one of the things I've discovered is we don't talk about comfort very much in church. I've heard very few sermons on it. In fact, very, very few sermons on comfort. Because it's not something we talk about very much. Particularly, you know, us Brits, we're very much sort of buck up, aren't we? And get on with it and get over it and, you know, pull your socks up and tie your bootstraps up and carry on. You know, that's our approach, isn't it? That was my approach. I went to a boarding school for 6 years and, you know, I spent my teenage years in that whole environment. And it was a comfortless environment. It was a pretty austere environment. How many of you remember the old round pinned electric sockets?
Yes.
Yeah. Some of you haven't got a clue what I'm talking about. But before we had the sockets we have now, we had round pin sockets. And they went out like with the flood, or a long time ago. But my school had the round pin sockets everywhere, right throughout the whole school. And we had to buy special adapters for our radios and cassette players, as they were in those days, so we could plug the normal pins into the round pin, into the wall. You know, it was really old-fashioned. You know, the punishment, the standard punishment, was a cold shower. You know, so at sort of 6:30 in the morning, it was, you know, get down there and have a cold shower. It was not a lot of fun. cross-country running was, you know, the sort of sport of choice, you know, the sport of choice. And the old swimming pool, the school's old swimming pool, was about a mile away from the buildings. And they built a water jump through it. So when you did the cross-country running, you had to jump in this swimming pool. Except it wasn't a swimming pool. It hadn't been used for about 50 years as a swimming pool. So it was just a pool of green. And you couldn't avoid it because they put a teacher down there. And if you didn't do it, you got a cold shower the next morning. Or you got pushed in, you know. So it was a pretty comfortless environment. You know, I'd gone from my nice, comfortable home where I had my own bedroom and, you know, my own stuff. And suddenly I'm sharing a dormitory with 13 other boys. And we just had a bed and a little cupboard. And that was it. It was just like 2 feet between each bed. And that was my space. You know, my space was... And you couldn't hide, you couldn't get away, you couldn't do anything. Sunday afternoon, I hated Sunday afternoons. We have to check which school this was, Godfrey. Sunday afternoons, I hated. Because Sunday afternoons at home were a nice Sunday lunch, and then go out for a family walk. Boarding school, I mean, I can understand it in a way, but we lived in a house, there were 30 boys in a house, and there were house parents. So really, this couple who looked after us, they didn't really have any free time or time to themselves because they had 30 boys all the time. And Sunday afternoon was their time. And everybody had to be out of the house every Sunday afternoon between 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock. So it didn't matter what the weather was. It didn't, you know, it didn't matter what the season of the year was. We had to be out of our house doing something. And there was only one thing that you could really do on a Sunday afternoon. Well, it had two expressions. You could either go and do sport. You could go and play football or rugby or go into to the gym and do sport. Well, I hate sport. Well, I hated sport. So there was no way I was going to be out there doing football or rugby or anything else. But the other thing people did was they went and the television was on in a school hall. And in those days, the only thing on television on a Sunday afternoon was sport. So you either watched sport or you played sport. And I didn't want to do anything. So I would just walk off on my own. We were in the middle of the countryside, and it was a nice place to be, and you know, there was lots of lovely countryside. And I didn't mind, in a sense, walking off on my own and doing it. But that's what I did every Sunday afternoon for 6 years. Was just take myself off for 2 hours, and if it was raining, I got wet, and if it was not raining, I didn't, you know, and that's it. But there was no, it was a real shock, actually, having been brought up in a good family, where family and time together was so important, to be sort of packed off and just to have that experience, you know, you go from one thing to the next in a few days, and it's like, oh, this is different. But it was a very comfortless experience. The particular school I went to, they took boys from broken homes, or where one of their parents had died. My dad had died a couple of years beforehand. Or where the parents were missionaries, so they were overseas a lot. Or where the parents were in the military, so away quite a lot. So you got 30 boys in this house, all with their stuff. And you get a pretty explosive mix. You know, everyone's dealing with their stuff. And it just kept coming to the surface. And the way it was dealt with was, it wasn't, you weren't talked to or you weren't counselled in any way. You were just told to get on with it. Just get over it. This is life. Get on, you know. This stuff happens. Just get on with it. Buck up. And so, you know, comfort wasn't something that I'd experienced a huge amount in my life. But actually, it's so important. If you look in the Bible, comfort is big on God's heart. It's, you know, there's loads on it. There's loads and loads in the Bible on comfort. And it's something that we don't talk about very, very often. But it took me a long, long time to get to a place where I could receive comfort for myself. I remember I went to an A school in Finland a few years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, and I was doing some of the teaching, and I got on the plane to fly to Finland, and I just sort of said, Father, what do you want to do with me this week? You know, and yeah, what do you want to do in my heart this week? And he said, how about receiving comfort? And I said, can we do something else? You know, is there anything else on your heart for me? And he said, no, I want you to receive comfort. So we had a session on it during the week, and I was the first one out there. I said to the guy leading the school, I'm not going to be on the ministry team today. I'm going to be the first one out to be ministered to. And I went forward at the end, and someone prayed for me, and I felt absolutely nothing, just like zero. I thought, okay, that's fine. You know, I know it's not about feelings. I know it's what God does in your heart.
But it would be nice to feel something. You know?
I went down to lunch into the dining room of the centre where we were having the school. And there was a live band playing some music as I went in. I just heard this band. And as I walked in, they started playing Edelweiss from The Sound of Music. And suddenly I was a gibbering wreck on the floor. I was trying to hold my plate of lunch and struggling. And someone had to take that off me and sit me down. But it was just like, as I walked into that music, Father spoke to me the words of that song. Every morning I greet you. Every morning I'm happy to meet you. And it just went straight into my heart as they played. They weren't singing them, they were just playing it on instruments. And as it did, it just went straight into my heart. And that, for me, was probably the first time that I'd received comfort at that really deep level. And I kind of think it's something I need to keep coming back to. And saying, Father, I need to receive your comfort. And I found out later, some of you will know Helene King. She was also on the team in Finland. She'd gone down to lunch just a few minutes before me, and she'd seen the live band there, and she'd gone up to them and said, do you know Edelweiss? And they said, yes. And she said, well, would you play it? And then they started playing it, and I walked in at that point in time. And it's just amazing how God puts those things together. And, you know, I said to Helene afterwards, I said, did you feel like you had a word of knowledge? Or she said, no, I just like Edelweiss. She said, I just thought, there were some musicians, and you know, if they're going to play, I don't know. So she said, well, if they know it, they can play it. So they did. But it's just like, you know, Father took that little thing, but that for me was just a really sort of deep moment. And, you know, I know that that comfort I received at that time went right to the depths of pain, you know, losing my dad and all that sort of thing. There was another occasion, I remember, we were in Toronto about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, and there's a story, I think it's Joshua in the Old Testament, he's chasing all the five armies, the enemy armies, and he chases them away. But the kings, the five kings, are cowards. They don't fight with their troops, but they go and hide in a cave. And Joshua realizes they're hiding in a cave, so he tells his soldiers to put a rock over the mouth of the cave. And they go and finish off the armies, and then in the evening they come back and they take the kings out of the cave. And they kill the kings. And this particular night in Toronto, Ken Gott from Sunderland was speaking. And he was speaking out of a situation in his own life where they had a little son, a baby son, who died. And he'd never, ever faced that personally. And one day, God told him to go to the gravestone and go to the grave of this little baby. And he refused. He refused for about a year. And in the end, you know, he did it. And he sat at the graveside of his little baby son, and he just broke. And, you know, God just brought healing to his heart, and it was just a powerful story. But as he was telling that story, you know, what he'd done was he'd locked a king, an enemy, he'd locked an enemy king in a cave in his heart. And he hadn't faced it, and he hadn't taken it out of that cave, and it had been there all his life. And that particular day when he sat by the grave of his little baby boy, that king was let out of the cave and dealt with. And as he was telling that story, I remembered my dad's funeral. I was just 10 at the time, and we went to the funeral. And my sister and I, my two younger sisters didn't go, but my elder sister and I, we went to the funeral. But then at the end of the funeral service, my mum just asked if we would go and sit in the car and wait while they did the burial and so on. And I understand, you know, my mum needed just time to process her own grief and her own pain, and you know, that's fine. But I always felt like I'd missed out on my final goodbye to my dad. That, you know, oh, go and sit in the car, you know, and then we'll come back to you. And I understand all the reasons for that. And you know, my mum did the absolute best she could, and she had, you know, we lost our dad, she'd lost her husband, and so it was obviously very, very hard for her. I felt like there was, like when Ken Gott was speaking that night, I knew that I had a king in a cave and I'd locked the door on it. And that night, you know, Father said, would you let that king out so we can deal with it? And I did, and I just broke and wept, and you know, all of the pain just came out. And there was an 18-year-old guy on the ministry team from Toronto just sitting next to me. And he just put his arm around me for 20 minutes and he didn't say a word, but he just prayed quietly to himself and just put his arm around my shoulders. Now, you know, if you've been to Toronto, the excitement happens at the front of the meeting, doesn't it? You know, that's where the intensity of everything's going on. And this guy's 18, you know. If you were 18 in that sort of situation, you wouldn't sit next to a 40-something-year-old man weeping his eyes out, would you? But this guy did. And he stayed with me the whole time. And, you know, I said to him at the end, "You didn't have to do that." He said, "I did." And he said, "You know, Father told me to put my arm around you and just stay with you." I'm thinking, wow. And I said to his mum, left me and he went up to all the excitement at the front. And I said to his mum, I said, "That's some boy, you know, that's, you know, that is real, really, you know, to have heard God speak like that and then do it." I was really impressed. But, you know, I just know that during those two times I told you about, that Father was comforting the depths of my heart where I needed it. Now, not all of us have lost a parent, not all of us have lost a loved one, but all of us have been through some form of trauma or another. And whenever we go through trauma, we need to be comforted. However big the trauma has been, we need to go through a greater level of comfort than the trauma we've experienced. Because it's that comfort that we receive that brings healing to the trauma that we've experienced. Now, what may be a trauma, or what may be a very traumatic event for one person might not be anything to someone else. You know, I mean, we're not necessarily, you know, obviously when we lose a loved one, that's a major traumatic act in our life that we need to receive healing for. But other things happen. Stuff might happen to me that it wouldn't bother you. Stuff might happen to you that wouldn't bother me. But the point is, it's bothered you. The point is that incident, that event, however big a trauma it's been a trauma to you. And it's only as we receive the Father's comforting love that trauma can begin to be dealt with and we can begin to receive healing. Because comfort is just this expression of love that goes right to the core of our pain, whatever that pain is, however it's been caused, and it brings healing to us. You know, when we're emotionally empty, we need comfort. When we're in shock, we need comfort. I remember a few years ago, we had a car accident on the way home from Scotland. It was very icy and we rolled the car over. We had the four kids in. They were all, John was about 9 months old at the time, so it's 20 years ago. And we rolled this car down this bank and we were upside down, you know, in the ditch. And it was New Year's Day in Scotland. And it just so happened that an off-duty policeman was following us, and he was able to use his phone and get through to the ambulance and other police and so on. And eventually they came and they took us back somewhere, and then we were getting a lift back home. And I said to the breakdown people, I said, "Why didn't they salt the roads or put grit down? Because this was the main road from Scotland to England." And it's New Year's Day and there's a snowfall and it hadn't been gritted. I said, why hadn't the road been gritted? He said, "Well, what do you expect? It was New Year's Eve last night." I thought, okay, Scotland, yeah, Hogmanay, it takes on a bit of a different... But, you know, we were in shock when we did that. And we, all six of us, sat in this car. They drove us back home to hours because the guy drove so slowly. He drove at about 50 miles an hour all the way down the motorway. And I was thinking, you can go faster. It's not that bad, you know. But no one in the car said anything for the whole journey because we were in shock. You know, the kids were in shock. We were in shock. And it's just like, you know, when you're in shock, when you've had that shock, you need comfort. And you know, we got home and we just sort of made a nice sort of one of those comforting meals for the kids, and we all enjoyed it together and started to sort of, you know, breathe again and get through it. But you know, when we're alone or abandoned, when we're in pain or sick and wounded, when we're broken, when we're suffering bereavement or rejection, we need to experience comfort. We need to experience comfort. It doesn't help someone coming up and saying, "Oh, buck up, pull your socks up, get on with it." That doesn't help. That doesn't bring healing. All it does is it make you feel like you're not capable. You know, because the fact that they're saying, "Oh, buck up," implies that they wouldn't have a problem if it happened to them. And it's like you suddenly feel like you're worthless, you're valueless, because you're struggling with this problem, this issue. And it seems like you're the only person in the world. When someone tells you to buck up, it's like you're the only person in the world with a problem. And everybody else is okay. Everybody else is fine. Well, that's not the reality. Everybody else is struggling with exactly the same stuff as you and I are. It's just that they won't face it. So whatever we've been through, we need to experience comfort that goes beyond the pain or the wound that we've experienced. Every trauma, however big or small, needs to be met with a greater level of comfort. If we don't receive that comfort, we're left in discomfort. We're left in pain. And Father doesn't want us to be left in pain. He wants us to be healed. And sometimes that healing process, it is a process. You know, I wish, you know, we could click our fingers and it would happen instantly. But you know, I've told you of, you know, two significant occasions where I received comfort related to my dad dying. I feel a lot better about it these days. But there are still times that I have to go to Father and say, "Father, will you comfort me? Father, will you pour your comfort into my heart?" Because it's a process. That Father pours his love into our hearts, and that brings a measure of healing, and it gives us that sense of release, but then there's more that Father wants to do. And some traumas are so shocking and so big that we can't recover from, you know, the body doesn't recover from them instantly. And we need time to recover. We need time to get our emotional strength back up. And that only really happens when we receive the love of the Father into our hearts. When we receive comfort. It's like our heart is a container, and we need to take out all of the trauma that's affected it. So scoop it out from the bottom and then pour love in, pour comfort in. Because if we leave any of that pain or any of that trauma in, all we're doing is piling stuff on top of it. And it still stays there underneath, festering. And we need to ask Father in his grace and in his mercy to take all that pain out and pour his comfort into our hearts. There's a very telling verse in Ecclesiastes, which is not one of those books we read very regularly, is it? But in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, it actually describes to us what it's like to be left in a comfortless state. It tells us what it's like, what we are like if we don't receive comfort. And what it says is this. It says, "Again I looked, and I saw all the oppression that was taking place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed, and they have no comforter. Power was on the side of their oppressors, but they have no comforter. And I declared that the dead who had already died are happier than the living who are still alive." That's very telling, isn't it? The guy is basically saying, if you don't receive comfort, you're better off dead. Because it's such a painful state to live in a comfortless state. You know, he says, you know, you've got the oppressors and you've got the oppressed. And the oppressors have all the power, and the people who are oppressed have nothing. He said, they've got no comforter. They've got no one to gather them, to be there for them. And his conclusion is that the dead who had already died are happier. That's a really, really sad state of affairs, isn't it? I don't think I want to live like that. You see, if we're not comforted, it's a desperate, desolate place to be. And comfort comes and restores something deep within us. King David knew what comfort was. He said this in Psalm 131. He said, my heart is not proud. My eyes are not haughty. I don't concern myself with great matters or things too wonderful to me. But I've stilled and quieted my heart like a weaned child with its mother. Like a weaned child is my soul within me. See, that picture of a weaned child is just a picture of beautiful satisfaction, isn't it? You know, when you see a baby who's just been fed, you know, they're just floppy and drunk, aren't they? And they're contented. Totally, totally contented. And, you know, King David describes himself like that. He was a king. I mean, don't you think he should have been concerned with great matters and things too wonderful? You know, that was his job. He was the king. And he says, oh no, I'm not bothered about that. I'm not bothered about those things. I'm just like a stilled and quieted child. Something inside of him was so satisfied that he could just write those words. In Psalm 119, verse 76, it says, may your unfailing love be my comfort according to your promise. May your unfailing love be my comfort. Philippians 2, verse 1, it says, love always comforts. Love always comforts. See, we don't know what King David's background was. But he says in Psalm 27, though my mother and my father forsake me, the Lord will receive me. Now, we don't know what he'd been through as a young child. There's a possibility that David was an illegitimate child. And there's quite a bit of evidence in the Bible for that. And so when Samuel comes to Jesse and says, Jesse, bring me your boys. You know, Jesse's probably feeling a bit ashamed and doesn't want to wheel in the illegitimate one. And Samuel goes down all of them and says, well, hang on, are there any more? And then Jesse has to own up to it and say, well, yeah, very good. You know, and David gets brought in. And he's the one that's anointed. You see, when David went up to fight Goliath, his brothers saw him and said, oh, for goodness sake, go away. You know, what are you doing here? Go back to the sheep. It's like they didn't really want to know him. When he goes to live with King Saul, I mean, bless him, Saul threw a spear at the guy 3 times trying to kill him. You know, they didn't exactly have a sort of good relationship. And yet David can write all these wonderful psalms about the love of God and the comfort of God and the relationship he had with his Father, with his Heavenly Father. Because somehow in that rejection and in that pain, he'd come to a place where his heart could be totally, totally comforted. Where he could put all of that behind him and just write of the steadfast love of the Lord. And the, you know, his goodness and his mercy and Psalm 23 and the richness of that. Because there was a man who had gone through his brokenness, gone through his rejection, and allowed God the Father to be his comforter. See, David needed to experience comfort. You know, we don't know his whole story, but he needed to be comforted. And we need to be comforted too. David wrote Psalm 23, verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now, even when we walk through the dark places, even when things are difficult, even when things are tough, you know, the valley of the shadow of death, you know, God our Father is there to comfort us. He's there to put his arms around us. He's not there to sort of, come on, only two more miles to go, only another 2 years in this horrible place, you know. You can get out of this, pull your socks up and we can get through this together. No, he comes to him and he comforts us in those difficult seasons. And I just want to encourage you, whatever season you're going through, if it's a difficult season, if it's a challenging time, if you're facing things that you'd rather not be facing, then just ask Father to comfort you. Ask Father to come and pour his comfort into your heart. See, if we don't allow love, if we don't allow pure love to comfort us, we will look for comfort in other areas. Mm-hmm. You know, sex, wrong relationships, alcohol, drugs, chocolate. I love chocolate. I'm sure it's okay to like chocolate. But you know, we can look to all these wrong clothes, shopping, all these things we can look to comfort us. But actually, it only does it temporarily. You know, we feel, you know, we go and buy a big bar of chocolate and eat it and we feel satisfied for a little while. And the next day, we need another bar of chocolate. You know, you can go and have alcohol and it dumbs, you know, it just softens it for a while. But the pain comes back. See, if we don't let pure love comfort us, we'll find and seek after false comforts. And their comfort doesn't last. In fact, it actually makes us feel worse. In Isaiah chapter 40, he writes, "Comfort, comfort my people, says your God. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem and proclaim to her that her hard service has been completed, that her sin has been paid for, and that she has received from the Lord's hand double for all her sins." You see, comfort is big on God's heart. Comfort's really big on God's heart. And he wants his children to receive comfort and to be healed in the depths of their heart. Mm-hmm. Comfort is very tender, it's very gentle. And in Isaiah, when he says, "Comfort, comfort my people," that repetition is like, greatly comfort them. You know, it's not just a little bit of comfort, but it's greatly. It's like, you know, God, pour out double comfort so that we can really, really be comforted. And as we receive that comfort, it transforms the barren places and it brings joy and gladness. It brings thanksgiving instead of sorrow. In Isaiah 51, it says, "The Lord will surely comfort Zion and will look with compassion on all of her ruins. He will make her deserts like Eden, her wastelands like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in her, thanksgiving and the sound of singing." That's the transformation that our hearts experience when we receive comfort. We go from being a barren place, a dry place, a wasteland, and we become a fruitful garden. Instead of sadness and sorrow, there's joy and gladness. That's the power, the transforming power of comfort. That's the power that comfort has in our hearts, when we allow it to go to the very depths, to the very deep places. God loves to comfort those who mourn. Yeah, he doesn't get out his big stick and tell them to get on with it and pull their socks up and la di da di da di da di da di da di da. Yeah, he doesn't do what we do. When people are in deep mourning and deep sorrow, he just loves them and he comforts them. And the power of that comforting love is what brings the change. I often think about Jesus and his disciples. Because they were a funny old bunch of people, weren't they? You know, you've got Simon the Zealot. Just call him a terrorist. Because that's what he was. He was a terrorist. The Zealots hated the Romans. They, you know, if they saw a Roman soldier, they had one aim, and that was to kill the soldier. You know, just before the time of Jesus, the Romans had gone up to a particular town in Judea and they'd killed all of the men and all of the boys and they'd put them on crosses. They crucified them on crosses down the street. And you know, that's probably the area that Simon the Zealot grew up in. So he's got these childhood memories of these big, bad, horrible Roman soldiers. And all he wants to do is go and take a knife to them. And Jesus says, if a Roman soldier asks you to carry his coat for a mile, take it for 2 miles. How do you think Simon felt when that instruction came out? You know? I could think, you know, Simon was thinking, I'm not even going to carry a step. I'm just going to kill a guy. But you see, Simon must have gone through a heart transformation. He must have gone through that, you know, spending time with Jesus. You know, all the stuff, you know, at the end of John's Gospel, it says, if all the things that Jesus did were written down, books wouldn't be able to contain them. Well, there's probably a lot of discussions that Jesus had with his disciples that weren't written down. And one of them was probably Jesus talking to Simon, the terrorist, saying, hang on, you don't need to be a terrorist anymore. And I suspect in that time that Jesus was with his disciples, he would have comforted Simon and shown him another way. How about Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector? You've got one guy working for the Romans and one guy hating the Romans. And they're on the same team. Now that's not going to work without a bit of diplomacy and management skills. I suspect Jesus sat them down and said, hey, look, you guys, you've been enemies, but now you're brothers. Now, we don't read those stories, but when we see the transformation of the disciples through the Gospels, this sort of thing must have happened. You know, Jesus must have sat down with his disciples and comforted them and shown them that they didn't need to live the life that they thought they were living. You know, Peter with his big foot and open mouth. You know, bless him. You know, I'm sure Jesus had to comfort him a few times. And then, you know, Mary and Martha, when they've just lost their brother Lazarus, Jesus goes and comforts them. And we read that that was the occasion that Jesus wept. Because he felt the pain of those two sisters. He knew what he was going to do. He knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. It wasn't the fact that Lazarus had died and that was the end of it. It was he was feeling the pain of the two sisters. And I'm sure in that moment he comforted them. And brought that depth of healing to their hearts. And of course, on the cross, Jesus looks down and sees his mum. And he asks John to look after her. And he asks his mum to look after John. You know, even on that moment, he's concerned for his mum. And just speaks a word that I'm sure she felt was just really... When Jesus said that, I'm sure something in her heart felt comforted. That's my boy. He's going through all that pain, all that suffering, but he's thinking of me. And that must have done her heart so much good. See, Jesus fed 5,000 people. Why did he do it? Because he was concerned for them. They were hungry. They'd been with him all day and they hadn't had any food. And Jesus looks after their natural needs. He feeds them. And food is a very comforting thing, isn't it? You know, I'm so glad we had lunch together. You know, it's just one of those times when you gather around a table that it does you good. And it's not quite the same gathering around the table at lunch, is it? So I was glad that we did it this way. But food is very comforting. I remember the first time we had James Jordan in our house, and I can't remember what Fiona cooked, but it was good, because it always is. And James finished, I think we had apple pie and custard for pudding. And he likes apple pie and custard. And at the end, he pushed his plate away and said, "That's good comfort food, just like Denise would do." And I thought, oh yeah, win-win. And it's like, you know, it's like that, isn't it? When you have a family together or you just have a meal together, it's a very comforting time. And just sharing life together. And Jesus was concerned about things like that. You know, he wanted the people that had given up a day to be fed. It might only have been bread and fish, but he was concerned about that. In John chapter 14, this is just Jesus' last evening before he's taken away to the cross. And he says in John chapter 14, verse 16, he says, "I'm going back to my Father, but I'm going to send another comforter." Some translations say another counselor, but the word is comforter there. And Jesus is saying, "I'm going to send another comforter, the Spirit of Truth, the Holy Spirit." And the fact that Jesus says, "I'm going to send another comforter," that must mean that he was a comforter already. And he says, "Oh, I'm going back to my Father, but you guys, you still need comfort. So I'm going to send another comforter, the Holy Spirit, who will be with you." In verse 18, it's the verse we know very well. It's Jesus says, "I will not leave you as orphans." But another translation says, "I will not leave you comfortless." And it's like when we're comfortless, it's like we're living our life like an orphan. Empty, devoid of love, devoid of compassion, devoid of companionship. And Jesus says, "I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I'm not going to leave you comfortless. I will come to you." And we have a comforter that's come to us in the Holy Spirit. And as we live filled with the Spirit, we live filled with comforting love. Because that's the promise that Jesus left with us. When we're comforted, it brings a connection between us and our Father. Comfort takes away the disconnectedness. See, an orphan is disconnected. He's not connected to any sense of family. He's on his own. Has to make his own life, do his own thing, make it all happen for himself. And Jesus says, "I'm not going to leave you comfortless. I'm going to come to you." And what he's saying is, "I'm not going to leave you disconnected. I'm going to connect you back to the Father so that you can know that you are loved." We don't have to feel abandoned because God has come and poured his comfort into our hearts. It connects us to the Father. In 2 Corinthians, Paul writes these words. 2 Corinthians chapter 1. "Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. For just as the sufferings of Christ flow over into our lives, so also, through Christ, our comfort overflows. If we are distressed, it is for your comfort and salvation. If we are comforted, it is for your comfort, which produces in you patient endurance of the same sufferings we suffer. And our hope for you is firm, because we know that as you share in our sufferings, so you share in our comfort." We don't like talking about sufferings, do we? But it's a very real part of life. In some shape or form, all of us go through suffering. And Paul is saying here that God is the Father of compassion and the God of all comforts. He is the source of all the comfort we ever need. He is the Father of compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles. There is no trouble that we go through that is outside of God's ability to comfort us. There is nothing that we can go through that goes beyond his ability to comfort us, because he is the God of all comfort. When you read out those verses, you just see the number of times he says all. He is the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles, so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort which we ourselves have received. See, when we've been comforted, we've got something that we can give to other people to comfort them. It's not our own comfort. You know, Paul writes here that we can comfort those in trouble with the comfort that we have received. So we receive the Father's comfort, and then we can give the Father's comfort to those in need of comfort. Just as we've received it from God, so they can receive it. We don't know what Paul had been through, you know. Well, we do know a bit of what he'd been through. He'd been shipwrecked a few times and beaten and stoned. And, you know, when they stoned you, they meant to kill you. So he was either resurrected from the dead, or they didn't do a very good job at stoning him. But, you know, he had a few pretty brutal beatings in his life. And he didn't become an angry man. He didn't go back to his old ways of being angry and determined and whatever. He received comfort from his Father. When he'd been stoned and left outside the city, just probably left for dead, broken body, bruised, battered, blood all over the place, he must have received the Father's comfort into his heart to enable him to write these words. He must have received comfort. When he was shipwrecked, hanging onto a piece of wood for his dear life, crying out to God, he must have been comforted. For him to write these words, to know that the comfort that surpasses everything, that he himself had received from the God of all comfort. Everything and anything that we go through can be comforted by the love of the Father. Lamentations is another book we never read very often. But in Lamentations chapter 5, verse 17, it describes our hearts as being sick. And it's describing, if you read the whole chapter, it's describing a comfortless state. It's describing someone who's having a pretty miserable life. And the writer of Lamentations says, you know, our hearts are sick. And the answer to a sick heart is comfort. The answer to a broken heart is comfort. The answer to a wounded heart is comfort. When we're alone, when we're abandoned, when we're in a state of brokenness, when we're facing or going through bereavement, we need to be comforted. And what we will find is that eventually that comfort will overflow. And that comfort will flow out from us to those around us. And the thing I've seen is people who have been through difficult situations themselves. People who have been through difficult times and then received comfort. They're the best people to go to when you need to be comforted. Because it is real and genuine. It's not put on, it's not pretend, it's not just following the manual. It's something that's coming from their heart because of what they've experienced themselves, what they've been through themselves. And as they have been comforted in that deep place, as they've known what it is to be broken and broken and broken, and then to be put back together again, by the healing love of the Father. They're the ones who can comfort us in our times of need, in our times of sorrow. I just want you to take a few moments to think, you might not have to think too much, of the trauma or the shock that you face or you've been through. Just call that to mind. Just think about some of those traumas that you've been through, some of those things that you faced, some of that pain that you've faced, or maybe even facing. And then let's just ask Father to come and pour his comfort into our hearts.